Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he said to Korah and all his company, in the morning, the Lord will show who is his and who is holy and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will bring near to him. Do this. Take censers, Korah and all his company. Put fire in them and put incense on them before the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. You have gone too far, sons of Levi. And Moses said to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him? And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, we will not come up. It is a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us. Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. And Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, and I have not harmed one of them. Now, obviously, you've got a serious situation here in the camp of Israel. And I want you to notice right there at the end of verse 15, Moses was very angry. I think that's the first time we read that, that Moses got very angry. I mean, you got to remember, how worn out is he from all of this? I mean, how tired is he of the children of Israel continuing to question his leadership, continuing to question the provision of God? It has to be exhausting. Week after week, this group of people continue to challenge the authority of Moses. Now, God has dealt with grumblers. He's already sent fire to kill grumblers. He had Miriam contract leprosy. He has shown over and over and over again, he doesn't like the grumbling. But yet they don't learn their lesson. They just keep it up. And this time, by the way, notice that Aaron is also receiving criticism as well. He's receiving unjust criticism. Aaron's getting kind of a dose of his own medicine. Remember Aaron and Miriam, they challenged the authority of Moses as well. And now Aaron is finding out what it feels like. And it just a sign of, isn't it interesting that Moses is quick to defend Aaron here? He seems to be quick to defend Aaron. When Moses is attacked, you know, it doesn't seem to defend himself all that much. But I mean, when it comes to Aaron, he is quick to do that. He speaks up in a hurry. But no, what's going on in Numbers chapter 16 is really two different challenges by two different groups of people. You have the Levites, some from the tribe of Levi, and some from the Reubenites. And they kind of meld into this one single rebellion. But there's really two issues at work here, and I want to tell you what they are. Dathan and Abiram, really, the Reubenites, they are challenging the competency of Moses as a leader. They are accusing Moses of not following through on his job of leading them into the land of milk and honey. In fact, did you notice that these guys call Egypt the land of milk and honey? They said, you brought us out of the land of milk and honey, and you have not put us back into a land of milk and honey. Now, was Egypt milk and honey? I don't think that was the case. I recall Egypt being sweat, toil, and slavery, and death. But this is where the Israelites thinking. This is where their minds are. They say, you took us out of a good land, and you've yet to bring us back into a good land. So you got to stop here and say, well, whose fault was that? Whose fault was that? Why are they going at Moses here? It wasn't Moses' fault that they had not gone into the land of milk and honey. It was their fault, the people's fault, because they listened to the 10 spies. That they weren't willing to trust in God. Remember, those spies encouraged unbelief. And one of them was from the tribe of Reuben. But maybe these two guys are thinking, hey, we're Reubenites. We're the tribe of the firstborn. And the leader of this people, what ought to be from our tribe? I mean, after all, we're the oldest. And so they challenged the competency of Moses. And they're really claiming that Moses kind of turned his leadership and his position, and he abused it. And that's what they're saying. And that's why I think it says that Moses is very angry. He doesn't usually defend his honor, but he strikes back. After he defends Aaron, he strikes back and he says, listen, I've not taken a thing from these people. The only thing I've taken from them is a lot of grief. But he says, I've not taken a thing from them. I've not enriched my position in any way. And another thing to think about, I mean, did Moses volunteer for this position? I mean, was he trying to get votes to be the leader of Israel? Of course not. This is what God called him to do. He was drafted, and you remember, he didn't even want the job. But Dathan and Abiram, the Reubenites, what they're saying is, Moses, you're not doing a good job. You're not fit to be the leader of Israel. But on the other hand, Korah, the Levite, he's really doing something different here. While Dathan and Abiram are challenging the competency of Moses, Korah seems to challenge the legitimacy of an exclusive Aaronic priesthood. In other words, notice what he says in this text in chapter 16. He says the whole community is holy, every one of them. Now, that sounds really nice. I mean, everybody's holy. That's nice. But really, underneath those words, they're filled with jealousy. Because basically what he's saying is this, that he and some of the other Levites, they're discontent, that they're not satisfied with the roles, with the significant role that they have to play in the tabernacle. They say, we weren't picked to be the priest. We weren't picked to stand at the altar. They didn't have that job and they didn't like it. They were mad that only Aaron and his sons were able to do that. So they're saying, why? Why is it just Aaron and his sons that have that privilege? We want that privilege as well. So they really bring that complaint to Moses, but who's the charge against? Well, the charge is against Aaron. That's who they think their real problem is with. But who's their real problem with? Yahweh. That's who they're challenging. And Yahweh is going to decide. So let's go on to day two, I think, in verse 16. Moses said to Korah, be present, you and all your company, before the Lord, and they and Aaron tomorrow. And let every one of you take his censer and put incense on it. And every one of you bring before the Lord his censer. 250 censers, you also and Aaron, each his censer. So every man took his censer and put fire in them and laid incense on them and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. Then Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin? And will you be angry with all the congregation? And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, say to the congregation, get away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Then Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins. So they got away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents, together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. Verse 28. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, and that it has not been of my own accord. If these men die as all men die, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates something new and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them and they go down alive into Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised the Lord. And as soon as he had finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. And all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, "Lest the earth swallow us up." And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to take up the censers out of the blaze. Then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. As for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar. For they offered them before the Lord, and they became holy. Thus they shall be a sign to all the people." And so the next couple of verses, he took the bronze censers, which those were burned and had offered, and they were hammered out as a covering for the altars. Here's what I want you to see. To be a reminder to the people of Israel, so that no outsider who is not of the descendants of Aaron should draw near to burn incense before the Lord, lest he become like Korah and his company, as the Lord said to him through Moses. As I said, I know it's a lengthy reading, but I just feel like I'm going to do this injustice if I try to really explain this. It's just, to me, it's just drops your jaw to think about what happened here and how God dealt with this situation. But there's a couple of things that I want you to notice. And the first thing that I find interesting is that Moses, how ready Moses was at this time, along with Aaron, to intercede for people who really only made his life difficult. You see this with Moses. For the second time, we read he fell down before the Lord. I mean, remember he did this at Sinai. Remember when they made the golden calf? He did it again at Kadesh Barnea when they didn't believe Joshua and Caleb. And now he's done it again. And God says, "I'm going to wipe everybody out." And Moses pleads, "No, please don't." But another thing that I want you to notice is that God wanted the assembly to show by their deeds that they did not share the spirit of Korah. Did you notice what he said to them? He said, you tell the people to get away from them. Get away from them. It doesn't matter how righteous these people may be. They need to show by their actions that they do not have the spirit of the unrighteous. That's what God is saying to these people. I want you to show that you don't have the spirit of Korah. And then I want you to notice at the end there in verse 40 that this was to be a reminder for the people. He wanted the people, every time they walked into the tabernacle or into the temple, to remember this story. He said, "Take these censers and I want you to hammer them down and I want you to cover the altar with bronze. I want you to put a covering on the altar so that it will be a sign to Israel that only the sons of Aaron may serve as the role of priests." Now you'd think after this they'd learned their lesson. If you watched a group of people swallowed up by the earth whole, well, you think that you would learn their lesson. But let's look in verse 41. I want you to notice, let's start reading at verse 41. Day 3. "But on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel, all the people of the children of Israel, grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, saying, 'You have killed the people of the Lord.' And when the congregation had assembled against Moses and against Aaron, they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared, and Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Get away from the midst of this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment.' And they fell on their faces. And Moses said to Aaron, 'Take your censer and put fire on it from off the altar and lay incense on it and carry it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them. For wrath wrath has gone out from the Lord, the plague has begun. So Aaron took it as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly. And behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700 beside those who died in the affair of Korah. And Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting when the plague stopped. Once again, these people, the very people that really owe their life to Moses, they attack him again. And he hits the ground. I don't know. It seems to me maybe that Moses knew what was going to happen next. I mean, after all the mercy that God has shown these people, maybe it's like Moses kind of already knows that he's going to send a plague. And so he tells Aaron, go immediately, and I want you to make atonement for these people. And you have to wonder, I mean, would his life have been easier if he hadn't have said that? And these people have created such difficulty for him. What if he just said, these people just never learn? They just don't ever get it. What if he said, just go ahead and wipe them out, Lord? Maybe then I can go into the promised land. I think one of the things that makes Moses such an incredible, godly leader is his absolute devotion to his flock. Think about it. No matter how they acted, no matter how they behaved, he just couldn't stop caring. He couldn't stop caring. That's a great leader. But God knew Moses couldn't take 40 more years of this. We come to day 4 because God's ready for this to stop. Now, notice in Numbers chapter 17. And this, I think, is connected to chapter 16. I think these stories go together. Let me read this, make a comment, and then I'm going to just close with two points that I see from this story. Let's start reading in chapter 17 at verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel and get from them staffs, one for each father's house, from all their chiefs according to their father's houses, 12 staffs. Write each man's name on his staff, and write Aaron's name on the staff of Levi, for there shall be one staff for the head of each father's house. Then you shall deposit them in the tent of meeting before the testimony where I meet with you. And the staff of the man whom I choose shall sprout. Thus I will make to cease from me the grumblings of the people of Israel, which they grumble against you. Moses spoke to the people of Israel, and all their chiefs gave him staffs, one for each chief, according to their father's houses, 12 staffs. And the staff of Aaron was among their staffs. And Moses deposited the staffs before the Lord in the tent of the testimony. On the next day, Moses went into the tent of the testimony, and behold, the staff of Aaron for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Then Moses brought out all the staffs from before the Lord, all the people of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his staff. And the Lord said to Moses, put back the staff of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign for the rebels, that you may make an end of their grumblings against me, lest they die. Thus did Moses as the Lord commanded, so he did. And all the people of Israel said to Moses, behold, we perish, we are undone, we are all undone. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of the Lord shall die. Are we all to perish? So something I want you to notice is that God considers grumbling against his leaders as grumbling against himself. God takes that personally. And in this story, we see that God chooses to do something about it. He says, I'm going to put an end to it. I'm going to put an end to it. And God says, I want this grumbling to stop. Let's make this point once and for all. And so Aaron's rod, of course, blossoms and produces those ripe almonds. But I just want to close with just a couple of lessons. There's several here. But just for times, I'm just going to share two with you tonight. And the first one is this. I mentioned this just a moment ago. I think there's two warnings. I'll say it that way. In this story that's connected, there's a warning to be respectful of God's appointed leadership. And this is what we see as we read through the story of the wilderness wanderings and the leadership of Moses, is this lack of respect for God's appointed leader. And I want to show you a passage. Turn your Bible to Psalm 106. In Psalm 106, I want you to notice this. What it says in verse 16. 106th Psalm. Notice in verse 16. Psalm 106 at verse 16. It says, when men in the camp were jealous of Moses and Aaron, the Holy One of the Lord, the earth opened and swallowed up Dathan and covered the company of Abiram. Fire also broke out in their company, and the flame burned up the wicked. Now, I want you to notice the flame burned up the wicked. Now, they may have argued, well, we follow the commands of God. We don't commit adultery. We don't covet. We're not wicked. But God says you are wicked. And the reason why you are wicked is because you cause weariness and discouragement in my leaders. God says, I call that wickedness. I think that's serious. I think that's something that we need to consider, to make sure that we are respectful of God's leaders. In Jude, verse 11, I think this is interesting. Another passage way back. Go back in your New Testament to Jude. Notice in verse 11. In Jude, verse 11. Jude, verse 11. Says, woe to them, for they walked in the way of Cain and abandoned themselves for the sake of gain to Balaam's error and perished in Korah's rebellion. Now that's some pretty strong company to be in there, isn't it? To be in the company of Cain and of Balaam, people that attack the leaders of God, Jude says, are associated with Cain. And he says, the sin of Korah will be punished. And you need to keep away from anybody that has the spirit of Korah. And that's a warning in this story. When it comes to the leaders of God's people, when it comes to the organization of the church and the leaders of the church, the warning is that we better be respectful of God's leaders, the leaders of the church. Obviously, respectful of Jesus Christ, the chief shepherd. But there are also our shepherds who labor among us, that I think this is a warning that we see in this story for us, to be respectful of them. But another lesson or warning that we see is a warning to respect God's approved access. And here's what I mean by this. When the rebels rejected Moses and Aaron, well, they just really just rejected him. What were they doing? Well, as I mentioned, they were really rejecting God's right to set the terms of how he can be approached. They didn't like it. They didn't like that God set the terms. God made it very clear what he wanted. But yet, because he chose to swallow those people up in the ground, well, the people became so convinced that not just anybody could approach God, that they became afraid to approach God at all. That's what you see back in chapter 17. Back in chapter 17, verse 12, the people of Israel said to Moses, behold, we perish, we're undone. Everyone who comes near to the temple of the Lord shall die. And they say, are we all to perish? They got the lesson so clear that they were afraid to even go to the tabernacle. That's not what God wanted. So God did something. Now, he spoke in Numbers 18 to Aaron. He spoke to Aaron. He didn't usually do that. And the only other time I think he did this was, he did it back in Leviticus chapter 10. Remember when Nadab and Abihu were killed because of offering unauthorized fire. Go to chapter 18. Notice what it says in verse 1. Chapter 18 and verse 1. So the Lord said to Aaron, you and your sons and your father's house with you shall bear iniquity connected with the sanctuary. And you and your sons with you shall bear iniquity connected with your priesthood. And with you bring your brothers also, the tribe of Levi, the tribe of your father, that they may join you and minister to you while you and your sons with you are before the tent of the testimony. They shall keep guard over you and over the whole tent, but shall not come near to the vessels of the sanctuary or to the altar, lest they and you die. They shall join you and keep guard over the tent of meeting for all the service of the tent, and no outsider shall come near you. And you shall keep guard over the sanctuary and over the altar, that there may never again be wrath on the people of Israel. And behold, I have taken your brothers, the Levites, from among the people of Israel. They are a gift to you, given to the Lord to do the service of the tent of meeting. And you and your sons with you shall guard your priesthood for all that concerns the altar and that is within the veil, and you shall serve. Watch this. I give your priesthood as a gift. What's God saying here? He's making it clear that failure to approach him on his terms, or to say, maybe say it a better way, failure to approach him through his appointed representative is going to result in judgment. Well, and that message was clear every time the worshiper walked in the tabernacle and they saw the altar. You don't approach God however you please. You come to God through the person that he has selected. So God is making it clear, you approach me on my terms. You can approach me, but you have to do it through the person I provide. And as it says in verse 7 there, I give this priesthood as a gift. This service of the priesthood as a gift. And so you even see in this story, you see the mercy of God and you see his justice. And I want to close by saying this. We said this from the beginning. Nathan said this. Look for Jesus on every page. And if you do that, it's going to make these passages in the Old Testament really come alive. Because I want to suggest that if you look closely, you'll see Jesus. I think this story is a picture of God's grace in Christ. Because Jesus is God's divinely appointed high priest. It is through Jesus, God's appointed high priest, that we have access to the Father. That's how it's made available. That's the good news. That's the good news. That's the good news of the gospel. But with the good news, there's also bad news. And the bad news is that any other way, it's not going to work. There is no other way. And I think God is foreshadowing all the way back in the book of Numbers. God is saying, I am going to provide a gift. I'm going to provide a priesthood as a gift so that you can approach me. But don't you dare approach me any other way except through the gift that I provide, except through the priest selected. And I'll tell you what that means for us. That's why we can't be deterred when we face persecution and verbal persecution. And there are some people who say that we're narrow-minded and we're exclusive and we're intolerant. When we preach Jesus as the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him, there's going to be some who don't like that. But what we learn from this story is that the only way we can approach God is through his divinely selected priest. You know, people want to take Jesus out of the good news. They want to take the blood out of the gospel. And if that's the case, there are people who are going to be lost. There are people who are going to be lost. People must hear the good news that there is a way to God, and there's only one way, and it's through Jesus Christ. And you're going to die if you do not come to him on his terms. And you must come to him through the shed blood of the high priest, Jesus. We can draw near to God, but it's got to be on his terms. We have confidence, as the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 10, to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus. Only when you're in Christ are you on that rock. Paul gave me something, he gave us all something to think about, as he said this morning, don't think about just standing on flat ground. And I thought about, that's right, we stand on the rock. We stand on the rock of Christ And as we sing that song, you know, we stand on the rock, and all other ground is sinking sand. And that's right. Any other way to try to approach God is sinking sand. It will result in death. So it could be that you're here tonight and you need to come to God. You need to come to God, but you need to come to Him on His terms, and it requires a response on your part. God has selected His divinely appointed high priest. The offering has been made. The sacrifice has been made. Will you come on His terms and kneel before the cross and allow the blood of the high priest Jesus to wash away your sins so you can have a relationship with your Creator? If we can help you tonight, let us know while we stand and sing.